Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. Listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd. Well, we're happy to be back with a brand new show for you guys this week. Today's show is going to be devoted to cheese tools and accessories.
Yes.
Which is something that I feel like, at least for Americans, is kind of a new, it's like a burgeoning industry,
yeah.
It seems like, because, yeah. You know, people are eating more cheese at home, people are appreciating cheese in different
ways.
Around
the holidays, people want to eat more cheese.
A lot of people have cheesehead friends that they want to get good, you know,
right.
Nice gifts for. And so there are a lot of cheese tools and accessories out there that are pretty excellent. So we're going to be spending some time talking with Brooklyn Slate. We're going to be talking with Christy and Sean of Brooklyn Slate, which is based in Red Hook, Brooklyn, just around the corner from our warehouse.
Yep.
And then later in the show, we're going to be talking with Martin Boss, who is from Boska, which is a Dutch company that's been producing cheese tools for over 100 years. So Christy and Sean, are you with us?
We are.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for joining us. So I hear, are you guys at the quarry? Is that true?
That is true. We're at the quarry for the week.
Wow.
Very cool.
that's more than we can say for ourselves. We're in Bushwick.
Yeah.
But, you know, people are eating pizza, but there's no nature to speak of here. So can you tell us a little bit about Brooklyn Slate, about how you guys were inspired to create this business together?
Yeah, so a few years back, Christy saw, actually, some slate cheese boards at a cheese shop, and she thought this was a really great idea. Maybe we can do this ourselves, and as luck would have it, she's a third-generation quarry woman in her case. Her family owns a couple quarries in upstate New York and Vermont. They're right on the border across from each other. So we went up there, took a tour, grabbed a few samples, and brought them down. And we came up with some packaging and a logo and all that good stuff. Went to a few cheese shops. And before we knew it, four out of the five places we went to placed an order. But it all just kind of sprung out of that one idea and some of those samples, and we decided to make it into more of a business.
That's fantastic. I feel like, you know, how it's so rare for somebody to have an idea for a business like that, and then
yeah.
All of a sudden there's just a need for it in the marketplace, and you're like, okay, voila, let's figure out how to make this work.
Yeah, we were very lucky.
And you know, at first we had like trivets and a few other, you know, we tried out, you know, what can you plate exactly on slate, and it really just came down to cheese and any sort of liquid, like a beer, glass of wine for coasters. So those are the two main things that we sell now.
And can you talk a little bit about your background and, you know, what helped you make the product and brand the product?
Well, I had just graduated. We were actually, it's time that we decided to start this business. We were very fortunate that Sean had been laid off from his, he was doing graphic design and web design for CBS, and I was getting my master's at Parsons for fashion design. We had odd schedules and we had time on our hands, and we just sort of decided to go on and do this as a project at first. I think that our interest in food has really helped us grow the business, as well as our interest in design and specifically product design.
It's been like a nice convergence between enjoying food maybe too much, and then also, you know, enjoying design and thinking of different ways to, I guess, express ourselves with design.
Well, you guys certainly, I mean, your website's beautiful. Yeah. You put together an awesome, awesome cheese survival gift package last year for the holidays that I know was super successful. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about some of the other things that you offer on your website? Are there other gift packages and things you guys are cooking up for the holiday season this year?
Yeah, so, well, we're excited that we'll be relaunching the cheese survival kit to coincide with American Cheese Month, which is in October, of course.
Fantastic.
And in addition, yeah, we're very excited. It's going to look a little bit different. We think it's going to look very cool, and that should be up in a few weeks. In addition to that, we also do something called the Pantry Collective, which is an assortment of basic, well, not basic, I mean, delicious jams, cheeses, and crackers that come with a board and a wood cheese knife. And then, of course, we've done the Plowman's Satchel, which is sort of our take on the Plowman's Lunch, which incorporates pickles from Rick's Picks, Cabot Club bound cheddar that comes by way of Saxelby's, and Calcutta crackers, and beets, of course, too, from Rick's Picks.
Oh, that's fantastic. That sounds great. And so your website, for our listeners, when people, everyone should check it out. I mean, these gifts are beautiful, if you know.
Yeah, and the photos on the website are beautiful, too.
Yeah, anyone in your life who's a cheese lover, this is definitely a contender for this holiday season.
Yeah.
This is a plug, but also a better opportunity to see even more photos. Today, actually, we launched a new site called PlateToPlate.com, which features sort of profiles on mongers and restaurants that are using our plate, but also incorporating some beautiful photography from some photographers in Brooklyn that have joined us for these profiles that we've done.
Awesome. So we have PlateTheSlate.com, and then is it just BrooklynSlate.com for your regular website?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct.
Fantastic. And so can you just walk us through a little bit about, you know, from quarry to finished product, what does that process look like for you guys?
Sure. So what they do at the quarry is they blast stone from the ground, which then they create the actual quarry. They take the big, like, boulders up and break them apart, basically using a really big hammer and chisel, because the slate will split in sheets. You don't really need to do too much cutting at first. You can make it into rather large sheets, and then they trim it down using saws, and eventually it ends up in the form, like the size that we get. We then take the slate from the quarry after it's been fully cut, and we skin it, and we apply an oil to it to make it food safe, and then we do all of our packaging, and then that's that. Ready to go.
That's amazing. From it's that, like you said, what a unique family resource to have. You know, that's a really awesome thing that you guys are able to sort of, I don't know, reinvigorate aspects of the family business. Now, Christy, is your family still where does most of the, you know, of the material from your quarries end up?
Well, the majority of it actually doesn't. It used to be mainly roofing tiles. But now they do a lot of crushed plates, so they'll take, like, those big boulders and they'll crush them into driveway material, like slate bedding for gardens. Then they can, like, make it into a clay for tennis courts and baseball fields.
Wow.
That's the majority of their business. And we make up most of what they would call, like, a slate roofing.
And so what did your family think about your business? Were they believers, or were they thinking you guys were crazy, or what was that like?
I think at first they were very supportive, and my dad was really hands-on with us. My mother actually used to do our first, like, deliveries from the quarry to Brooklyn. She would drive it all down in her car.
Wow.
And so we'd be much larger than that now. Everything is a palace and by freight, but they were very involved in the beginning. Then I think we sort of became a nuisance, because we had started, we had, like, created this thing that they hadn't really, like, the quarry hadn't anticipated the growth. So So at first it was like this little project that we were doing, and they were more than willing to help. And now it's become something like very real. And now now we've worked out all of the kinks. We have a very nice system, and it's a good thing for both of us.
And now getting together for Thanksgiving and Christmas is a good thing.
Yeah. it's like raising a child. It's like at first it's all cute and wonderful, and then it becomes an adolescent.
Toddler,
you don't know what to do
adolescent.
With it, and then you end up all getting along in the end.
Actually, we're out of the terrible teen space now.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, everyone should check out brooklynslate.com and plateTheSlate.com to see these beautiful products. Thank you guys so much for talking with us. We really appreciate you taking the time out.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back on Cutting the Curd, we're going to be talking with Martin Boss of Boska Holland. Stay with us.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
All right. Thanks to Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef for sponsoring Cutting the Curd.
And for that lovely jingle.
I know. Brian Kenny, he did the jingle you just heard. He also did the opening jingle for our show,
yep.
Which is, I think, you know.
Classic.
Near and dear to my heart. Excellent. So we're back. We're excited to be talking about cheese tools, a mm-hmm. subject we haven't covered before. And we previously spoke with Sean Tice and Christy Hideka from Brooklyn Slate. Now I believe we have Martin Boss on the line from Boska Holland. Martin, are you with us?
I am definitely there, live and kicking from Amsterdam.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. It's so late. You're so crazy. Thank you for being on the show.
It's a pleasure.
What time is it in Amsterdam?
Sorry?
What time is it in Amsterdam right now?
It's about midnight now. 5 minutes to go for bedtime.
Wow. Wow. Well, thank you. I know we had some technical difficulties trying to reach you, so thank you for sticking with us.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure. I mean, everything for the cheese world. It's my world, so it's a pleasure to be on the radio in the U.S. now.
Absolutely. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about Boska, the history of the company, and what you guys do?
Absolutely. Now, first to start, I'm a fourth generation. We go back about 115 years here in Holland. I was literally born in the city of Gouda, like where the Gouda cheese is from. And at the moment in our little village, there's nowhere as much cheese in the world as there. It's about 60 million pounds of cheese stored, matured, and traded on a daily basis there. So I was literally brought up in a cheese environment. My great-grandfather was a blacksmith. The blacksmith changed into a hardware store, started focusing more and more on cheese within the last 4 or 5 decades. And now, since about 40 years, we have a fully dedicated company for accessories for cheese. And since about 11 years, I'm the owner, and my goal is to literally build the world's first consumer brand for cheese accessories, and that's why we're also very active in the States and in another 82 countries. So it goes all over the world, but focus is definitely in the States, Holland, Germany, and France.
That's fantastic. So we were talking, or I was thinking about it, and I was thinking that, you know, cheese tools used to be something that was kind of obscure, only used by professionals, only used by people who worked in the trade. Can you talk a little bit about how you think cheese tools have made a jump towards consumers rather than just being for professionals?
Yeah, absolutely. We in our world here in Holland, cheese irons were used for testing the cheeses, if they were matured in an equal way, if the salt percentage was correct, etc., etc. Then actually the first big step came about 40 years ago when we introduced the cheese plane in Holland, like the cheese slicer where you make a thin slice of cheese.
Oh, yeah.
And this is like, in France, I tried to sell this as a product where, compared to wine, if you taste wine, you need enough oxygen to get the taste of the good wine immediately in your palate. It's the same with cheese. The thinner the slice, the better the taste, and the quicker the taste goes into your palate. So that's a very important product, has been a very important product for us in Holland. And then actually, media in the U.S. did a lot, even with cheese plates in shows like Friends, helped get people get to know the cheese.
That's amazing. So cheese irons, that, you know, those are very useful. Cheese planes. Mm-hmm. Now, today, how many different products does Bosca have in its catalog?
Yeah, that's almost scary. We carry about 2,000 products for cheese,
wow,
meaning also display material for cheese, cheese irons, cheese wires, cheese big wedges, big knives, curved knives to cut through hard rind the cheese. And I can keep on talking, but the main focus now is consumer goods. We carry about 250 different cheese slices, graters, raclette machines, fondue sets, boards, knives. But our goal is not to be the most the biggest specialist in cheese accessories. It's more to create a whole cheese experience. What I want to have is I want to try to help people enjoy their evening. Meaning, we have everything to complete a full cheese experience, and that's more our goal.
Well, you guys certainly do that. I wrote about today's show in our weekly newsletter, which comes out for all of our cheese-loving customers. And in the newsletter, I promised that we were going to tell everyone what a party clet was.
Yes.
So can you tell us about the party clet and about the evolution of that product?
Now, to be honest, it didn't start with the party clet. It goes, it's worse, the story. it started with the barbeclet. I had a big customer from Switzerland, and he had a big problem selling his amazing, good-tasting raclette cheese, which is a cheese produced in the Jura in Switzerland, but also in France. The cheese, when it melts, is delicious over baked potato as well as over lettuce. It can be a winter meal, but it can be a summer meal as well. And we all know that, but the general consumer doesn't. So I tried to replace the barbecue by a raclette machine and didn't work out. The electricity was difficult. So we actually made a little pot to put on top of the barbecue, on top of the grill, to melt your cheese. So, and when I was first introducing that at the fancy food shows in New York and in San Francisco, people were all, they came up to me like, oh, no, I'm not a vegetarian, but I love it for my cheeseburger. I was like, hey, that's interesting. So for the cheeseburger, it worked out, and it's people liked it, but they don't always use their barbecue at Christmas time. So we made a little version with three little candles underneath, so a candlelight barbeclette or raclette in a way, and we call that the partyclette. So if you have a little party or see it as a bar snack, try to use melted cheese for a change. You'll entertain your guests.
100%. Well, a partyclette, basically, it's an ingenious thing. It has a little collapsible sides, which you flip up. There are three tea lights that go underneath, mm-hmm. and then you just put a little paddle on top of the tea lights that's coated with a nonstick surface. And so you put your cheese on the paddle, and after a couple minutes, it's really very fast. It becomes all bubbly and melty, and you're ready to go. And it's just it's very romantic, first of all. And we've had people use them in all different, for all different occasions. Picnics in the park. One person bought one to take on their boat with them.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's just a genius thing. So thank you, Martin, for developing the party clut. You have some big fans here.
Great. Try it with your new boyfriend at Valentine's. Yeah.
Nothing like stinky cheese to bring you closer together. So what are your most... I'm wondering, what are your most popular products in different parts of the world? Like in Holland, you said that the cheese plane is a very big seller. What about France and the United States? How are the markets different?
It is a different market, but even in France we do very well with the cheese plane. It's the tool we're known for. So we even carry about 50 different cheese planes, believe it or not. Yeah. Check it at Bosca. It's actually with a K, so BOSKA.com, and you'll find it, or at Sexbees, of course. What actually works very well now in France and Germany is the cheese curler, which is not very known in the U.S. That didn't make it yet. The cheese curler is to make like a flower of cheese. You scrape a little knife on a round piece of cheese, and you scrape it around a pin in the middle of the cheese. It's hard to explain, but it's on YouTube. If you look at cheese curler, or probably tête de moine, which is the cheese that is used for it, it's literally translated as monk's head cheese. That cheese was found in 1192 in the Jura in Switzerland as well, by a monastery, and that cheese actually doesn't taste that great if you eat it as a piece.
But if you scrape
it very, very thinly, and it is a flower of cheese, is delicious. It's again the oxygen. That tool is not known in the States yet, but that will be our new endeavor for the upcoming years. But that's actually my biggest product now here in Western Europe. If you look at sales, not in quantities, because that's still the cheese plane. Fondue is a big thing because it came back. In the 70s, it was hot. It went down, and now it's hot again. But not only normal fondue, people try to do different things. Everybody wants his own individual fondue. You put ingredients in the middle of the table, like kheer for the parents, for the children, maybe even chocolate, different flavors of cheese, the blue vein cheese or the red bacteria white mold cheese, whatever. Everybody creates his own little style fondue, candlelight underneath. You can even heat it in the microwave, so it's an easy thing to do, but it's an entertaining dinner as well. So these things are new developments.
That is fantastic. Now, was that a pun when you said fondue is really hot right now? No, I'm just kidding. That was a really bad joke. I'm sorry. So, well, thank you so much, Martin, for talking with us. And sorry we're keeping you up so late, but we love Bosca and we love your products, and we are proud to have you on Cutting the Curd.
Thank you very much. I hope we all together we can let the people enjoy cheese a little bit more on the dining table. And I'm a big fan of you guys. But we'll see each other soon somewhere in Eastern USA.
Absolutely. And everyone should check out Bosca.com. You know, their products are great. It makes a really wonderful gift. And
you can even find us at the Museum of Modern Art. Or at Fairway or Wayfair or Amazon, but also of course at the specialty stores. That's what we're known for. It's the high-end stores.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again for being on the show, and can't wait to see you soon.
Likewise. Ciao.
Ciao. All right. So we have a couple minutes left on the show today. And Sophie and I are just going to... So we were able to talk to two wonderful artisans. Totally different stories, which is kind of cool. And we just wanted to talk a little bit more about our rundown of some of our favorite cheese tools.
Yes.
Sophie, what do you like? What can you not live without when you're behind the cheese counter at home?
I have to say, at home, I think I'm into a good cheese paper. Recently is my newest thing, and we were just looking at some of the ones that Formaticum has. They're really beautiful, and they keep your cheese really nicely, you know, when you get home from the grocery store. I think that's probably my favorite tool, even though it's not really a tool, but
A tool, yeah, because if you buy good cheese and then you know you just leave it out in your fridge and it turns to, you know, crap in a couple days.
Exactly. You know? And if I'm like talking to my friends who maybe, you know, don't know the best way to care for the cheese, I think that's the easiest thing to do. Wrap it in something that'll keep it well.
So Formaticum, I believe their website is just formaticum.com.
Yeah, I think so.
And that's spelled Formaticum.
Yes.
They're a great resource. They sell all different kinds of cheese paper, and they can point you to local merchants that sell it as well. I know at Court Street Grocers in my neighborhood, they carry the Formaticum cheese paper. Yep. So anyone in Brooklyn, you can check out Court Street Grocers. Well, I was thinking, for me, the cheese tool that I love the most, and I guess this is more in the work environment, but is the Harp.
Yeah, me too.
It's a great tool. They're just, it looks like a little, what would you say it looks like? It's like a little handheld thing that has a taut wire, like a guitar string running across the bottom of it. Yeah. And it's really useful for cutting blue cheeses or blue Meyrine cheeses, anything that's going to be really soft and stick to your knife.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy a little Harp wire. And it sounds like Bosca is a good source for those as well.
Yeah. Sometimes you can find them too, like kind of like vintage ones. I know we have like a old one at the shop, but
we have.
I've seen
one
them around, like at antique stores and stuff. It's kind of cool.
So if you ever see something that has, it's like a handle basically with a guitar string running through the bottom of it, chances are you can cut cheese with it.
Yeah,
or butter. So that's kind of a fun one. Some other companies, just in case people are looking for resources out there, and I guess these are more for people in the industry, but Fromage X is a great company. They're based in France and Canada, and they're more of cheese making supplies, cheese aging supplies, shelving, cheese molds.
Yep, and we did a show all about them a couple of months ago with Robert Aguilera, which you can look up
exactly
on our website.
Yep. Robert gave us a really comprehensive sort of tour of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Hubert, which is a company based in Ohio, I believe. They make a really nice cheese tools as well. They sell the box cutter, which is a different kind of wire cutter for cheese, which is really useful. What about Etsy? Etsy, you were talking, someone recently contacted us that does state-shaped cutting boards.
Yes.
On Etsy.
Yes.
I'll
look up the name of that, and we can get it online on our blog or something, too, so people can check that out.
Yeah, and if anyone wants to check out our blog, the address has changed, right? It's now WordPress?
Yes.
I don't know. Saxelbycheese.
Saxelbycheese.wordpress.com.
Saxelbycheese.wordpress.com. Yeah. Okay, we'll definitely find that info. Yeah. Can you think of anything else that you find indispensable?
I think we've got two good ones. If you can cut the cheese and you can keep the cheese, then you can eat the cheese. That's what I always say.
And with that, that truer words could not be spoken. So thanks everyone for tuning in to Cutting the Curd, and we will be with you guys again next week with a brand new show. So check it out.
Yep. Bye.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Anne Saxelby.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.